My Rock, Danmarks eneste rockradio. Fang os på FM, DAB, RadioPlay.dk og nu også som podcast. Velkommen til My Rock Podcast.
Det er nu engang blevet onsdag, og dermed tid til en ny udgave af My Rock Podcast. Mit navn er Sten Skovgaard. Tak fordi du lytter med. For nylig tog jeg flyveren til Stockholm for at tale med Michael Åkerfeldt og Frederik Åkesson fra svenske Opeth. Opeth, der er et af de mest anerkendte progressive death metal bands i verden, har tidligere på året udgivet ikke bare ét, men to albums i ét. Deres nyeste album med titlen Encounter Venom er nemlig udgivet i både en svensk version og i en engelsk version. Jeg spørger Åkerfeldt og Åkesson om, hvorfor de valgte denne model, hvordan det er at skrive tekster på modersmålet frem for engelsk, og hvordan omverdenen har reageret på det. Derudover får du også at vide, hvorfor det har fået et latinsk navn, og jeg kan afsløre, at det har noget med Google og black metal at gøre. Og når man taler med svenskere, så er det uundgåeligt ikke at komme ud i en Danmark mod Sverige battle, og her viser det sig, at danske artister har haft en kæmpe indflydelse på Michael Åkerfeldts liv. Artworket til den nyeste plade er nemlig direkte inspireret af King Diamond. Michael Denner og Hank Sherman har været inspirationskilder for mange af deres riff. Men ikke nok med det, så har Åkerfeldt åbenbart en kæmpe passion for dansk obskur 70'er hippie-rock, til det punkt, at han har kimet medlemmer fra visse bands ned for at få fat i et sjældent eksemplar af deres udgivelser. Det kan du høre meget mere om, efter du har fået Svegets Prins fra den svenske version af Encounter Venom, vel at mærke.
Som upplever många en känsla av vind. I traveled all the way to Stockholm to meet the guys from Opeth. Mikael, Frederik, welcome.
Tak.
We're going to do this in English because, Mikael, you said, well, my Danish is shit, so...
Yes, I might answer like a question that you actually didn't ask. Because sometimes you kind of pick up a few words from in Danish and you're like, that's probably what he asked. And you answer something and you go like, okay.
Well, every day I sit across the table from a Swede and he talks only Swedish to me. And sometimes I go like, huh?
Yeah.
Come again?
We have that. We had a Norwegian sound engineer before, and he was from Kristiansand.
Yeah, their dialect is quite different.
Difficult.
Their dialect is quite different.
It's difficult to understand what he said. Mm. It took us a long time, but you learn eventually. We now have a Scottish tour manager, and same thing. It's like, what? What is he saying? You didn't understand anything.
So what you're saying is that the next coming Opeth album will be sung in the Scottish accent?
Maybe. Or Danish.
Well, let's talk about the new album, because it's coming out in Kautavennenum. Mm-hmm. Is that the way to pronounce
it? In Kautavennenum.
Wow. That's Latin.
I think.
Well, we'll get back to the title, because I was wondering why you chose that title, but we'll get back to that. The thing about the album is that it comes out in like two editions, a Swedish one and an English one. That's a first for Opeth. Why?
I don't know. Good question.
I thought you might have the answer.
Yeah, I don't really have the answer. The answer is the simple answer would be, why not? Kind of. We didn't necessarily try to tap in, or we're not trying to tap into the Swedish scene. Our language is quite unnecessary to know. I mean, we speak it in Sweden, of course, and we make ourselves understood kind of in Norway and in Denmark, parts of Finland. But overall, it's not a language that you need to know. But it's our language, and we've never done it. And it worked as a catalyst, you could say, for me to get started with the writing. I had started a little bit before I cracked the idea of the language thing. But once I came up with that idea, it just kind of rolled on. It opened up musical doors, oddly enough. I didn't sit down and write lyrics right off the bat. Like, oh, Swedish, let's write lyrics. I started writing more music, which is interesting. And then kind of halfway through the writing, I was happy with the music. And I had those kind of language barriers myself when it comes to music, that I avoided music that was sung in a language I didn't understand, which is why we from the beginning chose to sing in English, being the universal language of music or rock, whatever. So I got a bit like, I wonder if other people around the world have the same type of language barriers that I had. I don't have them anymore. And I'm happy for it, because I discovered lots of great music that I would have discovered otherwise. Like the Italian progressive scene, for instance, most of those bands sang in their native tongue. But just in case, I decided that I'll do an English version. Mm. Because there might be, I'm pretty sure there are people who will prefer that version because of the fact that they will understand what I'm singing about.
But I was thinking, when you were writing the stuff, you normally write in English, but this time you also did the lyrics in Swedish. Which part did you actually write first, the Swedish or the
Swedish? The Swedish version was meant to be the version.
Okay.
That's for quite some time it was just meant to be a Swedish version, and kind of, can I swear, fuck the world, kind of, you know, like, doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, in this, like, the musical climate, I'm not sure if it matters, really. But like I said, I wanted people to hear the record. So if somebody's going to skip on this record because they wouldn't understand the language, I would feel sad, I guess. I want people to hear it. But I started with the Swedish version, completed that one, completed the lyrics, recorded the vocals, and then just did a carbon copy in English, pretty much. Tried to translate the lyrics to the best of my knowledge and to sing the same vocal lines, same melodies. And it was easier than I thought, to be honest.
What was the biggest issue with doing this translation?
Well, the vowels. You know, like some vowels are more difficult to sing than others. So I might have written a great translation, perfect. And then I try to sing it, and it ends on a oo, for instance, which is harder to sing if it's high-pitched thing. So that was one of those things I had to kind of work a little bit, you know, work around. So I had to allow myself a pretty healthy portion of poetic freedom. And there are some grammar errors in there that are deliberate, just because I wanted to be able to sing it, of course. But generally, it was easier than I thought.
In Danish can be a pretty hard language to sing. It's easy to speak for us Danes, but it can be hard to sing, to fit like into the verses and stuff. How was Swedish compared to British?
It was, it wasn't that big of a transition, to be honest. I figured it's going to sound weird or funny. And in that case, I would have to think again. But no, it felt pretty natural, to be honest. It's, you know, it was exciting. It was exciting to write those lyrics, and it was fun. But I was a bit concerned for my R's, for instance. I can't roll my R's, which is not a problem when you sing in English. But in Swedish, it sounds like, it's like a speech impediment, really. You know, and I tried to overdo the R's, but it just sounded like contrived and over theatrical. And I talked to one of my friends about it, who's a singer too, and he said, "Well, don't worry about it. It's the Stockholm R," he said, and that calmed me down a little bit. And you know, it sounded fine. I mean, some people I played it to didn't even realize until a couple of songs in that, is that Swedish?
Mm. I feel like I want to hear your thoughts on this, because how did you react when Mikael came up with the idea of doing a Swedish album?
Well, it was a bit surprising when I heard about the idea, but when I actually listened to the first song Michael played me with vocals, I believe it was the last track on the album, Everything Will Pass, or All Things Will Pass, or Alt Tar Slut. It wasn't that big difference to me. It wasn't shocking. I think it melted in with the music very nicely, actually. Yeah, I thought it would be a bigger difference than I experienced when I listened to it. And I think it's a cool thing that Michael decided to do this, and we do this on the new album. It's different, and that's a bit what Opeth is about, to try to do something different every time around. We try to put out a new album. And strangely enough, doing a lot of interviews now with the journalists from Poland to Australia, they seem to prefer the Swedish version more.
Okay.
Even they don't really know the language, you know. So
the fun thing is, I can tell you that before we started the interview, we talked about Volbeat, a Danish band. They got some of their lyrics in Danish as well, but they've done all English versions of the songs as well. But the radios in the U.S., actually chose the one with the Danish lyrics in them because they sounded more authentic. So, well, basically that might be the same thing that happens to you, because it sounds like more authentic. So is this a more, I don't know if I should use the term true, but is it a more true Opeth album, this one, the new one?
I mean, I wouldn't say more true, but maybe, I mean, it's a cliche, but it's inevitable it became a bit more personal, because I wrote everything fairly quick. I'm a very impulsive writer, both when it comes to music and the lyrics too. So obviously I could understand everything right off the bat. So maybe a bit more personal, and it became a bit more contemporary. Before, I'd written some no substance lyrics that looks like they look beautiful, they're aesthetically beautiful. But if you break them down into what they actually mean, I mean, it's not necessarily the most important thing with a lyric, that they mean something. Mm. You know, they might mean one thing to one person and another thing to another. But this time around, I didn't have any beautiful words to hide behind, really. Because English, I'm an Anglophile, you could say. I love the English language, and I've been going through dictionaries, like, what's that word mean? And I create a line around a beautiful word. And we didn't have those. My language doesn't have those words that I deem beautiful in that sense. Mm. So it was a bit closer, I guess, to me, and a bit more modern, in lack of a better word. But it was nice. I wouldn't say it's more true. All the records that we've done have been the truest piece of work that we could put out at that point. But I like to see us as a band constantly on the move, looking for challenges and looking for new things. And we're doing that by consuming other forms of music. And like I said, I overcame that language barrier, so I found the music of countries, like folk music initially, you could say. Now when I go out record shopping, if I go to the Czech Republic, I pick up music from the Czech Republic, and you tap into the soul, the musical soul of that country in that sense. So that's a thing that I wouldn't have discovered if I had that language barrier. And the same for us, you know, like we have tapped into our own music, and I guess maybe we got a bit closer to that by doing this record in our own native tongue.
So by keeping an open mind towards all kind of musical genres, musical languages, you do that. But seeing from the other side of the table, your label, how did they react when you came to them and said, hey, guys, we want to do this in Swedish and English?
I think when I finally pitched the idea to them, I had already made up my mind that we could do an English version too. If I hadn't, I'm not sure what they would say. Okay. Maybe they would say it's a bad idea. I'm sure that we're about to put out our 13th record, and over the years, I'm sure that many people that we work with on labels have thought that everything we're doing is a bad idea. The album's too long, the songs are too long, there's no singles, you know, you don't look cool. And now a Swedish record, I mean, come on, you know, it's probably a business marketing nightmare to work with us. But we kind of built up our own reputation without the help of labels, I think. I mean, they helped to get the album out there, but we never would listen to what label says anyways. I mean, they can be right when it comes to marketing things, but from the creative side, I wouldn't listen to them anyways. So if we would just have the Swedish version, that's what they would get. Mm.
The new album, I'll Try Again. In Kaora Venenum?
Yeah.
Well, I'm getting good at this.
Yeah.
I never had Latin in school.
Me neither.
I was wondering, well, Swedish and English, I get that. But why a Latin title then?
Well, because I wanted something that tied in, you know, I didn't want a Swedish title for the Swedish version and vice versa for the English version. I wanted something that fits with both. And I could have found a word that's the same in both languages, like smorgasbord. You know what I mean? It would be, silly maybe. Mm-hmm. And I always wanted a Latin title. I think it's like a black metal damage, because that was fashionable back in the day with the black metal bands, and I always wanted one. And now was a good chance, I guess, to have one because of the two versions. If we just had one version, I think it wouldn't have been a Latin title. So I just wanted the same title for both versions, basically, and saw my chance of finally getting a Latin title. We haven't had that even for a song, I think, back in the day.
I Googled it because, once again,
me too,
I didn't have Latin. It transfers to something like the venom is in the tail.
Yeah.
So scorpion-like? Or?
Yeah, it's referring to the scorpion. Okay. Not the band, Scorpion. I'm surprised that they haven't nicked it already,
yeah.
The Scorpions, that they haven't picked that title, you know. But just like you, I typed in Latin phrases or something like that on, like, Google. Mm-hmm. And got, of course, a big list of, you know, more or less.
El Jacta Est.
Did you get that one? El Jacta Est? the dice is thrown. Something Julius Caesar said, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
The classic ones.
Yeah, and there's another one, Errare humanum est. I don't know if that's proper Latin how to speak it, but it's human to fail.
Right. So I found lots, and I had problems picking at some point. So some of those refused potential titles will be, I think they will be engraved on the runoff of the vinyl. Mm. One was, I can't remember exactly how you said it, but it was De observandum non imitandum, meaning to be observed, not imitated.
Ooh, yeah. It's getting deep.
Yeah. this one didn't have a reference point, and that was important for me. I didn't want to defend Platon or, you know, one of these great thinkers. Mm-hmm. And there was no reference to this phrase, which made me happy. And it looked aesthetically cool. It was a bit difficult, or is a bit difficult to say. But the meaning was good, and it connected with the artwork that we already had, actually. We had already, I'm not sure if you've seen it, but we had the band depicted as a five-headed scorpion in the artwork, mm-hmm. which I thought was curious. The remaining piece of the artwork is also relating to that title, you could say.
Well, let's dig into the artwork, because actually we were just going to talk about this later, but let's dig into it now, because one of the things I read about the artwork, looking into it, it looks awesome. I have to say, it's a pretty cool cover. But the thing is that it says, well, it has this nod to King Diamond.
Yeah.
I know that for a fact that you have a thing for King Diamond.
Mm-hmm.
A good old fellow Dane. One of our proudest exports. I was wondering, what is it about you and King Diamond?
I love him. Love him. Always have. Since I was a child, basically. I love his records, Merciful Fate, Solar Records, the concept, the makeup, the mystery mm-hmm. surrounding him. I never met him. And if I did, I would be very, very starstruck. But there's an obvious King Diamond reference, but that, like the cover that we have, wasn't, the original idea was something else. It was meant to be like a courtyard mm-hmm. with a castle in the background and surrounded by trees cut in the shape, the canopies of the trees cut in the shape of our heads. Mm-hmm. But we tried that, didn't really look good. And I just told Travis Smith, who did the cover, like, oh, just focus on a house, like a Victorian house. And he's, you know, incidentally, he's done a cover for King Diamond. He did the cover for Abigail 2, mm-hmm. which has a house on the cover.
Oh, yeah.
So I knew that he could do those kind of things. And, I mean, it is a nod to a lifelong influence for the band. It was when we started, I mean, when it was just myself and the previous singer, back in 90, we said that the music is going to sound like a cross, before we even written music, we said, like, what should we sound like? Oh, like a cross between Bathory, Candlemass, King Diamond, and Mephisto.
Well, Frederik, I have to ask you then, because that puts a lot of pressure on your shoulders. Michael Denner, Hank Sherman, the guys from Merciful Fate, are they guys that you look up to in your playing, your way of playing?
Definitely. Actually, Michael Denner came to see us when we played the concert, Concerthuset in Copenhagen, I know. But his friend sticked around after the show. Also, he's in Denner's Inferno, his new band.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I grew up, my main influence was actually, one of the first heroes was Michael Schenker. And when I listened to Merciful Fate the first time, I could tell that Hank Sherman and Denner are definitely influenced by Michael Schenker as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been covering some of the Merciful Fate songs and King Diamond songs with previous pub bands I played with. So so I definitely dig into their playing style, and massive respect for their riff writing as well. I mean, they wrote a lot of the classic stuff, even in King Diamond as well, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And next year, Merciful Fate is reuniting. That is going to be awesome.
Is Denner and Sherman in that?
Sherman is in.
Just
Denner,
Sherman.
Denner is not.
And Tim Hansen is not.
Timmy is not.
Hansen is not involved.
Bjarne is playing drums.
Right.
Yeah. But
Tim Russ is, where is he? The drummer from Merciful Fate. He's disappeared.
I don't know.
I always loved his drumming. I remember when Axe, our drummer,
mm-hmm.
when we talked about his favorite drummers, like it was almost like an audition, like a speaking audition. You know, I asked him about his influences, drummer, favorite drummers, basically, and he said Ian Pace and Kim Russ.
Yeah.
And I was like, Kim Russ, mm-hmm. wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Nobody mentions him, but he's one of the grooviest metal drummers, hard rock drummers out there.
I don't know what happened.
I heard, like, I think I heard he became a mailman, which is right up the street of what musicians do.
Wow.
I know many heavy metal mailmen.
I just remembered a fun story regarding King Diamond. Maybe 18 years ago or something, I got mails from Antler Rock, and he was trying to get me into the band King Diamond, actually. So I was sending tapes to King, and it happened twice, and it was pretty close, but it didn't happen. But it was, I was super excited. But I believe Glenn Drover got the gig instead because he was maybe better, I don't know, but he was also a friend of King.
The thing is that in the new King Diamond band, there's a lot of Swedes. And I can't figure out what is it that makes you Swedish guys so much better at music than us Danes.
I think there's probably more metal musicians in Sweden.
Yeah, but not only metal. It's all over the place. It's in pop. It's in whatever genre. Swedes are always better than Danes.
I can agree to a certain point, but being a record collector, I dug around the Danish mylla and found so many great bands that are sadly now forgotten.
So like
60s band like Burning Red Ivanhoe,
yeah,
Cult Purpose Orchard. You had Young Flowers.
Yeah,
I love that stuff.
Young Flowers.
Yeah, I love them.
You know who was
Pan? You had Pan.
Yeah, you know who was drummer in Young Flowers at a point?
No,
Sean Bellu. You know him?
No.
He was the drummer in Gasoline.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gasoline. I never listened much to. It almost came across like a jokey band to me. Maybe because
listen to some of their early material.
I know they're popular.
I listen quite a lot of them. And, my dad used to love Gasoline, or still does.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember when I was a kid, 5 years old, they had the Gasoline live album with their heads up in the sky.
Yeah.
So that was like a childhood thing to me to listen to Gasoline.
Yeah.
Yeah. But also,
but sure,
speaking of Danish musicians, you have Lars Ulrich, who is in the biggest metal band in the world. So.
Well, yeah.
Yeah,
sure thing. There are exceptions.
We don't have a Swedish Metallica member.
No.
No.
I know.
Exactly.
I know, but there's... You got ABBA.
You got King Diamond.
Yeah, sure. It almost sounds like we're battling now because... Can you remember those carts that you had with cars on them and say, well, mine got like 2,000 horsepowers.
Yeah, the old car carts.
Yeah.
I remember them. I used to play them.
We should do that with metal bands.
You had a great band called The Old Man and the Sea. Double album. Really difficult to find. Great, great record.
You seem to know a lot about Danish music.
Oh, the Rainbow Band from Denmark. Fucking hell, they were fantastic.
Hmm?
Fantastic.
Okay,
I've been searching. I wrote, actually, Cult Purpose Orchard, Danish band. They had an English singer, which, to be fair enough. But I am obsessed with this band to the point where I've been... emailing, almost harassing some of those members. I've been talking to the daughter of the singer on the phone.
Wow.
Got hold of her number, asked about her dad, like a psychopath, basically.
Yeah.
Stalker. And I emailed both the old drummer, Ken Gudman, who's now passed away.
Yeah.
And also recently got hold of the bass player, Mikael Fries.
Yeah.
Who runs a blues club somewhere. I can't remember where it was. And I emailed him asking, is this the Mikael Friis from Kalpar Presotia, and he wrote back saying, yeah, it's me, what do you want? And I just wrote, I started writing in capital letters, like, Michael, Mikael, I'm big. And I never got a reply after that.
He was like, no, block.
Yeah.
Never go down.
I'm complete. I think the Danish early 70s, late 60s rock scene, best, one of the best in the world. Sadly, most of those bands are now forgotten.
Exactly. Well, let's get back to Opeth, because that's basically why we're here. And we are in Stockholm, and you chose to record the new album in Punk Studios. You could have chosen any studio in the world, but you chose one in your backyard. How come?
It's a good studio, and we wanted to be, you know, both myself and Frederick, we have kids. I was pushing more than the others to record in Sweden. Besides, we'd done two records in Wales at Rockfield Studios, and now we felt like, let's look, see what we have in Stockholm. We recorded one record in Stockholm before at the old Metronome Studios, or Atlantis as it's now called, and we were meant to be in, I think it's Ghost Ward Recordings.
Yeah.
With David Castillo. But there was like a clash in the bookings there. And it became a clusterfuck, to be honest. So we had to look elsewhere. And I'd forgotten about Park Studios, even though it's right next to where my mother used to live. So I've seen it for years and years and years. And it was owned by the band Kent, or co-owned. And the engineer, Stefan Boman, who engineered our record, he was also the engineer for Kent. And Tobias from Ghost, we had dinner. And he's like, have you been to Park Studios? And I was like, I've forgotten about that one. No, we haven't. It's great. It will be great for you. You'll love it. And the rest is history.
We went over there after Tobias recommended it because we were running out of time, sort of wise, with the schedule for the album. And yeah, as Michael mentioned, it was a bit of a clusterfuck. But when we got there, checking out this vintage gear they had, and luckily enough, right before we started the recording, they bought in a Neve console that was from 73 or something like that, when they still were hand-soldered. Mm-hmm. And also they have the EMI console that Beatles used to use at the Abbey Road. That's only 8 of them made in the world. So, and tons of vintage gear, preamps and et cetera, et cetera. I could babble on with that forever, but we'll spare you that.
No problem.
But it just felt like it had a great potential. Also had a large room upstairs where you could record drums if you wanted to. That didn't happen, but just quite amazing with all the gear and the setup, you know. Going through different mixing consoles in the same session is a bit of a luxury. You can use the EMI console for the guitars, for instance, and the drum recordings for the Neve console. And yeah, it was
pretty nerdy.
Very nerdy. But that's the point with this album. The point was to do a very epic album, and we were very picky with this recording. We A-B tested different stuff, guitars, basses, whatever, and went really the extra mile, I think, with everything. We didn't cheap out on anything. I mean, there's 21-piece string orchestra recorded in London, and we only used the real deal, no samples or anything like that.
Is this the most important album in Opeth history?
Yeah, I can't say that, really, because each new album, yeah, it's the most important one at the time. But I think it's not up to us to judge, to say that it's the most important. You'll see kind of, you know, in 20 years, the time where it sits in our discography and where it sits in the hard rock world, basically. It might be forgotten, just like some of those Danish bands. Or it might be, you know, hailed as a mistake. Or hailed as a masterpiece, or dismissed as a mistake. But for us right now, it's the most important one. And I feel it's a stepping stone into something. It's a milestone for us to just have been able to record and now soon to be releasing 13 records. It's a big thing for us. And we like it, you know. I'm very happy with the songs. We think it's a very good record. I don't think personally I could have written anything that felt more relevant and now, Opeth now, kind of, than this record.
And it's out in a few days, and then you'll be on tour from late October and until, yeah, a lot of months. You're going to through Europe, Japan, Australia.
China.
And you're hitting Denmark as well, one concert. It's the one concert on your tour that is, at the moment, sold out.
Mm.
You're going to play Det Kongelige Teater. Probably the most beautiful stage, the most beautiful venue in Denmark.
Nice.
How did you get in?
I don't know. It feels like we don't even need to promote it now because it's sold out. But yeah, I don't know how we got in. I mean, our manager and we discussed where do we see Opeth performing, of course. We have talked about that. And we played everything from CD pubs to Mexican restaurants to arenas to theaters. And we found ourselves that because we're not that much of an animated band on stage. We play the songs, look at our feet, you know, we have some nice lights and stuff like that. But those nice theaters, they add to the experience, I think. The sound is usually very good in those types of places. And it feels like a special event each night. So in a perfect world, we would book a tour where we only play older theaters with history. And it turns out that we have kind of reopened some of those places to rock music around the world. Like we played the Sydney Opera House and the Royal Albert Hall.
Which was designed by a Dane.
That's right.
Yeah.
Same as the concert house. Same architect did concert house in Copenhagen as well.
Yeah.
Did he do it in Oslo as well?
Not sure.
I don't know.
Danish architecture. But we like to play in those types of places.
And you played the Royal Albert Hall as well.
We did, yeah.
Wow.
We played Radio City Music Hall. And it's not a lot of music that's been in those types of venues that incorporate, like the Screams, for instance. And I think we have been able to open up those doors because we have this other side to the band. Had we been a pure death metal band, nobody would dream of letting us play in those types of places. But because we have a broader range in our musicality, I think we have been allowed in for some reason. But it's not me calling around. We have a, you know, an agent, and the manager takes care of those kind of things. But obviously we're happy that we're playing those nice venues as opposed to the CD.
But I know that it's not. It was not part of the plan from the beginning. But if I told you this in the beginning of the 90s. Well, you're going to play the Sydney Opera House, you're going to play Royal Albert Hall, you're going to play the Kongelige Teater. You're going to play all these venues that are not designed for rock and roll. What would you have said?
It sounds wimpy, probably. Yeah, we wanted to be in the ice halls, like where myself and Frederick, when we grew up, where we saw Judas Priest in the 80s and whatever. But we've been to some of those places too. And usually it feels isolated, kind of. You know, I don't necessarily like playing arenas. I mean, you feel isolated on there. But in concert halls like the one, like the Copenhagen one, and other places like that around the world, feels like you kind of there's an intimacy, an automatic intimacy in some of those places that you get even in big venues like Albert Hall. Radio City Music Hall, you get that intimacy, even if it's like, 6,000 capacity type places. You feel like, that you're there together with the people listening.
And structures actually built for music?
They are. I mean, we're probably louder than some of those places, but some of those other classical, you know.
Well, one tiny negative aspect about a certain type of venues, I think, is when it's all seated. I prefer the mix when you have the standing crowd on the floor combined with seated. Some of these venues, it's all seated and it becomes a bit sterile to me. It's a bit more rocking, so to speak, with the standing crowd. But
people get up, right?
They get up.
Oh, that's good. I prefer to sit down. I'm lazy when I go to shows, but
there's also the only chance for us to get a standing ovation.
Ta-da! Yeah. True. But hey, guys, thank you so much for your time, and good luck with the new albums, because it's not only one.
That's right.
And I'm really looking forward to see how the reaction will be to both the Swedish and the English versions, and we'll be seeing you in Copenhagen.
Yes, we'll do. Cheers. Thank you for having us.
Till it holds.
My Rock Podcast.
Siden Encounter Venom blev udgivet tilbage i september, har albumet fået fantastiske anmeldelser verden over og rent faktisk er blevet kåret som bedste album i 2019 af det anerkendte Prog Magazine. For kort tid siden udgav Opeth også en animeret kortfilm til sangen Ingen Sanning er Alas. Pardon my Swedish. Der er ligesom Opeth musik er melankolsk og mørkt, men også enormt smuk. Det var alt for My Rock Podcast for denne gang. Tak fordi du lyttede med.
My Rock. My Rock. Podcast.